Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are many accounts of people's experiences during the Texas Revolution and the runaway scrape, but perhaps none are as interesting and illuminating as those of a woman who was just a little girl during that time period. Delu Rose Harris lived between the years of 1825 and 1914. She was 10 years old, almost 11, during the Texas Revolution, and many years later, when she was about 73 years old, she set down her memories of the tumultuous times. She was born to Dr. Pleasant W. and Margaret Rose in St. Louis, Missouri, on April 28, 1825. And she came to Texas with her family in April of 1833. For a while, they were at Harrisburg, before settling at Stafford's Point in December of 1833. Little Delu Rose helped make bullets for the men of the Alamo, and was one of the many that fled east during the runaway scrape. Her memoir is a vivid and interesting glimpse into that time. I have done some light editing to her manuscript, mostly of spelling, to make it easier for me to read, and hopefully for you to understand. And being the reminiscences of a person that lived in a different century, there are some words that she used that are archaic and out of use, and to the ears of many, a few of them will sound offensive and harsh. Now, I've decided to leave these words in because it's important to witness them as being commonplace in the conversation of our predecessors. Now, the Rose family moved to Braes Bayou, about 5 miles from Houston, after the war, and she later married a New York-born immigrant to Texas, Ira A. Harris, in 1839. He died 30 years later in 1869 and was survived by Delu and 9 children. She died on April 2nd, 1914 at Eagle Lake, Texas, just before her 89th birthday. The following are excerpts from her memories of the Texas Revolution and the runaway scrape, beginning in January of 1836. Father returned home New Year's Day. Was gone 2 weeks, sold the hides, laid in a good supply of drugs and medicine. Would have gone to Harrisburg, but there is not any drugstore in that place. Says it would have better to have hauled his cotton to Harrisburg than waited for the steamboat. Says it is doubtful if he get it to market before May or June. Got an advance of $100 on the cotton, met some of the English people that lived in our neighborhood. Mr. Page has moved to Galveston Bay. The Atkins are living on the Brazos River near Columbia. Miss Jane A., the pretty English girl, is married. Also her mother, the widow Atkins, has married. All the men and boys that went to the army from this part of the country are home and at work. Seem to think there will be no more trouble with Mexico. There has been a garrison of Texas soldiers left at San Antonio under Colonel Travis. There is men enough in Texas to organize a large army. If they could be concentrated at one place. The people are at work, but are very much discouraged. Mexico has sent a revenue cutter to Galveston. She don't try to land, but is anchored outside. There are several schooners at Harrisburg loaded with cotton and hides that can't get out. The captains say the first big storm that comes will blow the warship away, then they will run out. Every farmer is planting corn. Mr. Dyer and wife are at home. They came from New Orleans. On board a schooner came in at the mouth of the Brazos. Didn't see the Mexican revenue cutter. They came on the boat to Columbia. From there, home on horseback. Heard such bad news, didn't finish their visit. Heard that General Santa Anna and Coase, with a large army, were en route for Texas. This news came direct from Tampico, Mexico, to New Orleans by an American. He came on a French ship. They says men and ammunition from the United States are coming to Texas. We had heard this news, but didn't know that it was true. Mrs. Stafford has gone. She took one Negro woman and two Negro children with her. Had one child herself. Mr. Harvey Stafford went with his stepmother. They travel on horseback. Their friends are very uneasy on their account, as there is Indians on the Trinity River, also in eastern Texas. The news that Santa Anna is marching to San Antonio has been confirmed. The people at Goliad and San Patricia are leaving their homes. Everybody preparing to go to the United States. There are more or less dissension among the members of the convention. They have deposed Governor Smith and installed Lieutenant Governor Robinson. The Mexican army has arrived at San Antonio. The council have gone to Washington on the Brazos River. People are crossing the river at Fort Bend and Jones Ferry, going east, driving their cattle and horses. Everybody talking of running from the Mexicans. And this next part is dated March 1st, 1836. The people had been in a state of excitement during the winter. New Colonel Travis had but few men to defend San Antonio. He was headstrong, precipitated Texas in the war with Mexico, but died at his post. I remember when his letter came calling for assistance. He was surrounded by a large army, General Santa Anna in command. Had been ordered to surrender, would fight till the last man died. Black flag had been hoisted by the Mexicans. This letter came in February. I have never seen the letter in print, but heard my mother read it. When she finished, the courier that brought it went on to Brazoria. I was near 11 years old. Remember well the hurry and confusion. Uncle James Wells came home for mother to help him get ready to go to the army. We worked all day. Mother sit up that night sewing, made two hickory striped shirts, also bags to carry provisions. I worked all day. Melted lead in a pot, dipped it with a spoon and molded bullets. The young men camped at our house that night, left next morning. Our nearest neighbors, Mr. Dyer, Bell, and Neil, had families but went with them to join General Houston. Father and Mr. Shipman were old. Adam Stafford, a cripple. They stayed at home. By the 20th of February, the people from San Patricio and other western settlements were fleeing for their lives. Every family in our neighborhood are preparing to go to the United States. Wagons and other vehicles were scarce. Mr. Stafford, with the help of the boys and Negroes, began gathering cattle. All the large boys had gone to the army. But the last of February, there was more hopeful news. Colonel Fannin, with 500 men, was marching to San Antonio. General Houston was at Gonzales with 1,000 men. Father finished planting corn. He had hauled a part of our household furniture and other things and hid them in the bottom. Mother had packed what bedding, clothing, and provisions she thought we would need, ready to leave at a moment warning. Father had made arrangement with a Mr. Bundick to haul our family in his cart. We were very confident that the army under General Houston would whip the Mexicans before they reached the Colorado River. Just as the people began to quiet it down and go to work, a large herd of buffaloes came by. There was 4,000 or 5,000. The buffaloes crossed the Brazos River above Fort Bend, came out of the bottom at Stafford Point, first made their appearance before day, passed on inside of our house. We could only see the dust and a dark cloud. It looked like a sandstorm. Father tried to get a shot at one, but his horse was so fractious it was impossible. We could not tell when the last buffalo passed, as the night was very dark. We were terrible frightened, as it was supposed the Indians were following the buffaloes. They passed and went to the coast. We had been several days without news from the army. Didn't know but that our men had been massacred. The prairie looked like it had been plowed after the buffaloes had passed. The way news was carried at that time was for a man or a boy to go from one neighborhood to another. We had heard that the convention had passed a Declaration of Independence, elected David G. Burnett, president, and Sam Houston, commander-in-chief of the Army. On the 12th of March came the news of the fall of the Alamo. A courier with a dispatch from General Houston for the people to leave Colonel Travis and the men under his command slaughtered. Texas Army retreating, President Burnett's cabin had gone to Harrisburg. Then began the horrors of the so-called runaway scrape. We left home at sunset, hauled bedding, clothing, and provision on the sleigh with one yoke of oxen. Mother and I walking, she with an infant in her arms. Brother drove the oxen. Two little sisters rode in the sleigh. We were going 2 miles where we could get in a cart. Father was helping with the cattle. He joined us after dark, brought a horse and saddle for brother, sent him to help Mr. Stafford with the cattle. He would go different road. Would ford the San Jacinto River with the stock. Mother and I rode father's horse, met Mrs. West. She was driven her oxen home. We had sent her word in the morning. She begged mother to go back and help her father. Said no. Told the lady to drive the oxen home, put them in the cow pen, turn out the cows and calves, get her children ready, and he would send assistance. Went on to Mrs. Rourke's, meet 5 families ready to leave. 2 of Mr. Shipman's sons arrived that night. They were mere boys. Came home to help their parents. The 2 sons of Mr. Shipman didn't go on home. Father sent them back for Mrs. West's family, as he knew Mr. Shipman's family had gone that morning. It was 10 o'clock at night when we got to Mrs. Rourke's. Shifted our things into Mr. Bundick's cart. He was waiting for us. Tried to rest till morning. Sister and I had been weep all day about Colonel Travis. Got the little books he gave us. Would have taken them, but Mother said it was best to leave them at home. We were on the move. Early next morning, Mother with her 4 children in the cart. Mr. Bundick, wife, and Negro woman on horseback. He had been in bad health for some time. Had just got home from visiting his mother, living in Louisiana. He brought 2 slaves here. The man drove the cart, and as Mr. Bundick had no children, we were as comfortable as could be expected. We had to leave the sleigh. Sister and I had grieved the day before, all day about Colonel Travis. Had big cried when our brother left us. Was afraid Mrs. West would be left at home. Slept well the first night, but had a fresh outbreak of grief when the sleigh was abandoned, but had the satisfaction of seeing Mrs. West and children. Mr. Coate would not go to the Army, hauled 5 families in the big blue wagon with his 6 yoke of oxen, hauled provision, Negroes bedding, and all the plunder that the others could not carry. We all started at sunup. Camped the first night near Harrisburg, about where the railroad depot now stands. Next day, crossed the Vince Bridge, arrived at the San Jacinto River in the night. There were fully 5,000 people at the ferry. The planters from Missouri and Columbia with their slaves were crossing. We waited 3 days before we crossed. Our party consisted 5 white families. My father, Dr. P.W. Rose, Mr. Dyer, Mr. Bell, Neil, and Bundick's families. Father and Mr. Bundick were the only white men. The others were in the Army. There were about 25 or 30 Negroes from Stafford's plantation. They had a large wagon, 5 yoke of oxen. Horses and mules were under an old Negro man named Uncle Ned. Altogether, black and white made a party of 50 people. It was almost a riot to see who should cross first. We got over the 3rd day, traveled a few miles, came to a big prairie. It was 12 miles to the next timber and water. Some of our party wanted to camp. Others said that the Trinity River was rising, and if we delayed any time, might not get across. We hurried on, got about half across the prairie when Uncle Ned's wagon bogged. The Negro men drove in the carts, tried to go on around the big wagon, 1 at a time till the 4 carts were fast in the mud. Mother was the only white woman that rode in a cart. The others traveled on horseback. Mrs. Bell, 4 children, Mrs. Dyer, 3 children, and mothers, 4, rode in the carts. All them that traveled on horseback had gone on to the timber to let their horses feed and get water. They supposed their family would get there by dark. The Negro's men put all the oxen to the wagon, but could not move it, had to stay there till morning without wood or water. Mother gathered the white children in our cart. They behaved very well and went to sleep. One little boy, Eli Dyer, kicked and cried for Uncle Ned and Aunt Sylvie till Uncle Ned came and carried him to the wagon. The child slept that night in Uncle Ned's arms. Mother, with all the Negro woman and children, walked 6 miles to the timber, found our friends in trouble. Father and Mr. Bundick had gone to the river, helped with the ferry boat. Late in the evening, the boat grounded on the east bank of the Trinity River, didn't get back till morning. While they were gone, the horses had strayed off, and they had to find them before they could go to the wagons. Those that traveled on a horse were supplied with provisions by other campers. We that stayed in the prairies had to eat cold cornbread and cold boiled beef. The wagon and carts didn't get to the timber till night. Had to be unloaded and pulled out. Note, writing in the year 1898 of those people, men, women, and children, I don't know that there is a living at this time any of them but my brother Granville, Rose. He is 75 years old and I 73. My brother was not with us when we crossed the Trinity. He was helping Mr. Stafford with the cattle. At the Trinity River, men from the army began to join their families. I know they have been blamed for this in history, but what else could they do? The Texas Army was retreating, Mexican Army crossing the Colorado, Colonel Fannin and his men prisoners. There was a large Indian tribe on the Trinity, more Negro men than whites among us, and many of them wild Africans, also the Cherokee Indians in eastern Texas at Nacogdoches. There were Tories, both Mexican and Americans. It was the intention of our men to see their families across the Sabine River, return and fight the Mexicans. I must say, for the Negroes, there was no insubordination. They were loyal to their owners. Our hardships began at the Trinity. The river was rising. It was a struggle who should cross first. Measles, sore eyes, whooping cough broke out, and every other disease that man, woman, and child were heir to. Our party consisted of 5 white families, also Mr. Adam Stafford's Negroes. We had separated from Mrs. West and other friends at the Vince Bridge. The horrors of crossing the Trinity is beyond my power to describe. One of my little sisters was very sick. The ferryman said those who had sick children should cross first. When our party got to the boat, the water broke over the banks from above. Run around, we were several hours surrounded by water. Our family were the last to get to the boat. Left more than 500 people on the west bank. Father's family were the last to cross. Driftwood covered the water as far as we could see. The sick child in convulsion. It required 8 men to manage the boat. When we landed, all the lowland was underwater. Everybody rushing for the prairie. Father had a good horse. Mrs. Dyer let Mother have her horse and saddle. Father carried the sick child, and Sister and I rode behind Mother. She carried Father's gun and the little babe. All we carried with us was what clothing we were wearing at the time. The night was very dark, crossed bridge that was underwater. As soon as we crossed, a man with a cart and oxen drove on the bridge. It broke down, drowning the oxen. That prevented the people from crossing as the bridge was over slow. That looked like a river. Father and Mother hurried on, got to the prairie, found a great many families camped. A Mrs. Foster invited Mother to her camp, furnished us with supper, a bed, and dry clothing. The other family stayed all night in the bottom without fire or anything to eat. The water up in the carts. The men drove horses and oxen to the prairie. Woman, sick children, and Negroes left in bottom. The old Negro man, Uncle Ned, left in charge. He put the white women and children in the Stafford wagon. It was large and had a canvas cover. Negro women and their children, he put them in the carts, guarding them till morning. It was impossible for the men to return to their families. They spent the night making a raft, worked by torchlight as the camps were near a pine grove of timber. There was no trouble about lights. It was a night of terror. Father and the men worked some distance from the camp, cutting down timber to make the raft. It had to be put together in the water. We were in great anxiety about the people that was left in the bottoms. Didn't know but they would be drowned or killed by panthers or alligators or bears. As soon as it was daylight, they went to the relief of their families, found them cold, wet, and hungry. There was many families that was waterbound. I didn't know those of our friends were Mrs. Bell's, 3 children, Mrs. Dyer and her sister Mrs. Neal with 5 children. Mr. Bundick's wife had gone out the first day that we arrived at the river. Mrs. Bundick's health was delicate. They had friends living near and went to their house. When the men on the raft got to those that had stayed all night in the Trinity Bottoms, found the Negroes were scared, wanted to get on the raft, but Uncle Ned told them his young mistress and children should go first. It was very dangerous crossing the slough. The men would bring one woman and her children on the raft out of deep water where men on horseback would meet them. It took all day to get them to the prairie. Had to carry cooked provisions to them, also to the Negroes. The second day, they brought our bedding and clothing, everything water-soaked. Had to take the wagon and carts apart. The Stafford wagon was the last one brought out. The old Negro man, Uncle Ned, stayed in the wagon till everything was landed at the prairie. It took 4 days to get all out of the water. The man whose oxen were drowned sold his cart to Father for $10, said he had seen enough of Mexico, would go back to old Ireland. It was 5 days since we crossed the Trinity. Had not heard any news from the army. The town of Liberty was 3 miles from where we camped. The people there had not left their homes. They gave us all the help in their power. My little sick sister died and was buried in the cemetery at Liberty. After resting a few days, our party continued their journey. We stayed at Liberty. Mother was not able to travel. She had nursed an infant and the sick child till she was compelled to rest a few days. After our friends had gone, a man crossed the Trinity River in a skiff. He was the bearer of bad news. The Mexican army had crossed the Brazos River, was between the Texas Army and Harrisburg. Colonel Fannin and his men massacred. President Burnett and cabinet had left Harrisburg and gone to Washington on the bay. Would go to Galveston Island. The people at Liberty then left. There were many families west of the Trinity, among them our nearest neighbor, Mrs. Rourke and Mrs. West. We had now been at Liberty 3 weeks. A Mr. Martin let Father use his house. There were 2 families camped near Mr. Bright and his son-in-law, Patrick Reels, from the Colorado River. One Thursday evening, all of a sudden, we heard a report like distant thunder. The next report, Father said, it was cannon that the Texas Army and Mexicans were fighting. He had been through the War of 1812, knew it was a battle. The cannonading didn't last but for a few minutes. Father said the Texas Army must have been defeated, or the cannonading would have not ceased so quick. We left Liberty in a half hour. The reports of the cannon were so distant, Father was under the impression that the fighting was near the Trinity. The river was 10 miles wide at Liberty. We traveled nearly all night. Sister, I on horseback, mother in the cart. Father had 2 yoke of oxen. Now 1 yoke, belonged to Adam Stafford, had strayed. Father found them. The oxen were a great help as we had but 1 yoke of oxen and the roads were very boggy. Rested a few hours to let the stock feed. Mr. Bright and 2 families were with us. We were sad and as wretched as we could be. Had been 5 weeks from home. Not much prospects of ever returning. Had not heard a word from brother or the other boys that were driving the cattle. Had buried the dear little sister at Liberty. Continued our journey through mud and water, camped in the evening, 50 or 60 young men meet us. They were going to join General Houston. One of them was Henry Safford, our neighbor returning from the United States with volunteers. Father told them there had been fighting, that they could not cross the Trinity at Liberty. They brought some good news from our friends. Mr. Stafford had met his sisters, Mrs. Dyer and Neal, and there was a great deal of sickness, but no deaths. That General Gaines of the United States Army was at the Natchez with a regiment of soldiers to keep the Indians in subjection, but didn't prevent the people from crossing with their slaves. General Gaines said the boundary line between the United States and Mexico was the Natchez River. The young men went a short distance from us to camp. Then we heard somebody hello in the direction of Liberty. We could see a man on horseback waving his hat. We thought the Mexican army had crossed the Trinity, as we knew there was no one left at Liberty. The young men came with their guns. When the man got near that, we could understand what he said. It was, "Turn back, turn back. The Texas army has whipped the Mexican army. No danger, no danger. Turn back. The Mexicans are prisoners." When he got to the camp, he could scarcely speak. He was so excited and out of breath. The next page is April 11th. Hearing the glorious news of the battle. When the young men began to understand the glorious news, they wanted to fire a salute. Father made them stop, told them to save their ammunition as they might need it. Asked the man for an explanation. He gave Father a dispatch from General Houston giving a statement of the battle, saying it would be safe for the people to return to their homes. The courier crossed the Trinity River in a canoe, swam his horse with the help of two men, left the battlefield the next day after the battle, said General Houston was wounded, that General Santa Anna had not been captured. The good news was, cheering indeed, the courier name was McDermott. He was an Irishman, had been a play actor, stayed with us that night, told various incidents of the battle, left next morning to carry the glad tidings to the people that had crossed the Sabine River. There was not much sleeping that night. Mr. McDermott said he had not slept in a week. He not only told various incidents of the retreat of the Texas Army, but acted them. The only time Mother had laughed since the death of my little sister was his description of General Houston helping to get a cannon out of a bog hole. We were on the move. Early next morning, the courier went on. We took a lower road, went down the Trinity River, crossed the Trinity River in a flatboat. April 12th. When Mr. McDermott left us, the young men fired a salute. They traveled with us till we crossed the river, stayed one night. At Mr. Lawrence's, there was a great many families there, among them Mrs. James Peary. She had not gone east of the Trinity. Her husband, Captain James Peary, was in the Army. Mrs. Peary was a sister of Stephen F. Austin. My parents knew them in Missouri. Mrs. Peary had a young babe, also a spry little daughter named Emily. After crossing the Trinity River, we had a disagreeable time crossing Trinity Bay. It had been raining 2 days and nights. There was a bayou to cross. There was no bridge. The only way to pass was to go 3 miles through the Trinity Bay to get around the mouth of the bayou. There were guideposts to point out the way. It was very dangerous. If we got near the mouth of the bayou, there was quicksand, and if the wind rose, the waves rolled high. The bayou was infested with alligators. A few days before our family arrived at the bay, a Mr. King was caught by an alligator and carried underwater. He was going east with his family. Mr. King had swam his horse across the mouth of the bayou, swam back to the west side, drove the cart in the bay. His wife and children became frightened. He turned back, said he would go up the river and wait for the waters to subside, got his family back on land, swam the bayou to bring back the horses, got nearly across with them when a large alligator appeared. Mrs. King first observed the alligator above water. She screamed. The alligator struck her husband with its tail. Mr. King went underwater. There were several men present. They fired their guns, but it didn't do any good. It was not in there to rescue them. The men waited several days, killed a beef, put a quarter on the bank, fastened it with a log chain, watched till the alligator came out and killed it. This happened several days before the battle. We passed without any trouble or accident, except the loss of my sunbonnet. It blew off as we reached the shore. The current was very swift at the mouth of the bayou. Father wanted to swim in and get it for me. Mother begged him not to go in the water. I had the pleasure of seeing it float away. I don't remember the name of the bayou. A little town called Wallace was opposite across the bay. We saw the big dead alligator that killed the man. We were glad to see the last of the Trinity. Father's horse had strayed. He would not stop to find the horse. said when he got us home would go back. Note, Mrs. King died in Houston with yellow fever in the year 39. Left one son, Ben F., a printer. April 14th. Arrived at Lynchburg in the night. Met several families we knew, among them our neighbor, Mrs. West. She had traveled with Moses Shipman family. Crossed the San Jacinto next morning. Stayed till late in the evening on the battlefield. Both armies camped near. General Santa Anna had been captured. There were great rejoicing at the meeting of friend Mr. Leo Rourke was in the battle. Met his mother's family. The evening before he came to the ferry, just as we landed, it was like meeting a brother. He asked mother to go with him to the camps to see General Santa Anna and the Mexican prisoners. She would not go, said she was not dressed for visiting. Gave sister and I permission to go to the camps. I had lost my bonnet crossing Trinity Bay, was compelled to wear a tablecloth for a bonnet. It was 7 weeks since we left home. Our clothing was very much dilapidated. I could not go to see the Mexican prisoners with a tablecloth tied on my head, as I knew several of the young men. I was on the San Jacinto battlefield the 26th of April. The 28th day was the anniversary of my birthday. I was 11 years old. We stayed on the battlefield several hours. Father was helping with the ferry boat, visited the graves of the Texans that were killed. In the battle, there was no one killed that I knew. The dead Mexicans lying around in every direction. Mother was very uneasy about Uncle James Wells. He was missing. Mr. Rourke said Uncle had been seen 2 days before the battle with Mr. Church Fulcher and was secretes to watch General Coase. They had gone to the Stafford's Point, were chased by the Mexicans, separated Fulcher and secretes, returned before the battle. Mr. Rourke says the burning of the Vince Bridge prevented several of the scouts from getting back. Father worked till the middle of the afternoon helping with the ferry boat, then visited the camps. Didn't see General Santa Anna, but meet old friends. He knew in Missouri. We left the battlefield late in the evening, had to pass among the dead Mexicans. Father pulled one out of the road so we could pass without driving over the dead body. Could not go around it. The prairie was very boggy. It was getting dark. There was now 25 or 30 families behind us. We were glad to leave the battlefield. It was a gruesome sight. Camped that night on the prairie. Could hear the wolves howl and bark as they devoured the dead. Met Mr. Kirkendall, family from Fort Bend, now Richmond. Their hardships had been greater than ours. They stayed at home. Had no idea the Mexican army was near. One day, the Negro ferryman was called in English. He carried the boat across. The Mexicans took possession. They embarked as many soldiers as the boat could carry. While the Mexican were crossing, someone said it was Captain Willie Martin Company. They knew he was above near San Felipe. Men, women, children, and Negroes ran down the riverbank, expecting to meet their friends. Just as the boat landed, the Negro ferryman, "Hello, Mexicans." There were three or four families of the Kirkendalls. They ran for the bottom. Mrs. Abe Kirkendall had a babe in her arms. She ran a short distance, thought about her little girl, went back, seen her husband take the child from the nurse, said then she was the happiest woman in the crowd. One old gentleman ran back to get his money, went through a potato patch, and buried it. The money was silver, so heavy, he could not carry it. One young married woman with a young babe in her arms ran into a big field, followed the party that was on the outside. The fence was high. They had now got of sight of the Mexicans. The woman's husband came to the fence. She gave him the child. He told her to climb over. She turned and ran in a different direction. Her husband followed the other families, stayed that night in a canebrake. Without anything to eat, the children suffered terrible. They made their way next day to Harrisburg and got assistance. Was at Lynchburg during the battle. Was helped by General Houston and furnished means to get back home. Mrs. Abe Kirkendall nursed the motherless child. She said they had heard from its mother. She went through the field, got out, went 20 miles down the river to Henry Jones Ferry, got with people she knew, thought her husband and friends would go there. She was alone the first day and night. The next day she got to Henry Jones. We were on the move early next morning. Have to go around about the way. The burning of Vince Bridge prevented us from going direct home. We hear nothing but bad news. San Felipe had been burned, dear old Harrisburg in ashes. Nothing left on the Stafford plantation but a corn crib with 1,000 bushels of corn. The Mexicans turned the houses at the point into a hospital. The Mexicans knew that Stafford Point had been a place where political meetings were held. Leo Rourke told Father while they was in the camps that he was confident Colonel Almonte, General Santa Anna's aide-de-camp, was the Mexican that had the horses for sale in our neighborhood. Father could not get to see Colonel Almonte as he was anxious to get his family away from the battleground before night. Burning the sawmill at Harrisburg and Billings on Stafford's plantation was a calamity that greatly affected the people on the plantation. There were a sugar mill, cotton gin, blacksmith shop, grist mill, dwelling house, Negro houses, and farming implements. The Mexicans saved the corn for bread. It was a great help to the people. Camped that evening on Sims Bayou, met men with Mexican going to the army, heard from Brother Granville. Mr. Adam Stafford had got home with the boys, all well. Heard that the cotton the farmers hauled to the Brazos River with the expectation of shipping it to Brazoria on the steamboat Yellow Sown, then at Washington on the Brazos, was safe. Father say if he get his cotton to market, I shall have two or three sunbonnets, as he was tired of seeing me wear a tablecloth for a bonnet. Heard Uncle James Wells is at Stafford's Point. He made a narrow escape from being captured by the Mexicans when he, Mr. Secretes, and Fulshear were run in the bottom by the Mexicans. His horse ran against a tree, fell down. Uncle was badly hurt, lost his horse and gun, went in the bottom, seen the houses burning on Stafford Point, as he was overseer there. When he joined the army, when Colonel Travis called for assistance, it was like his home. General Coase marched on next day, but left a strong guard at the point while Mother was talking. Uncle James and Deaf Smith rode up to our camp. It was a happy surprise. Uncle James' shoulder was very lame. The night after he lost his horse and gun, he crawled inside the Mexican lines, captured a horse and saddle. Uncle went in the bottom to Mrs. West's house, found corn and bacon, and a steel mill for grinding corn. His arm was so lame, couldn't come but eat fried eggs and bacon. He had been to our house, says everything we left in the house had been destroyed. He watched on the prairie at night till he seen so many Mexican fugitives wandering about, he knew they had been fighting. He met Deaf Smith and other men sent by General Houston to carry a dispatch from Santa Anna to General Filiosa. He told Uncle all about the battle, said he captured General Coase next day, 6 miles south of Stafford Point. Coase had a fine china water pitcher full of water and one ear of corn. He carried Coase to the point, got a horse and took his prisoner back to the San Jacinto battleground, left the fine pitcher at the point, gave it to Uncle James. Uncle stayed there till Mr. Smith returned from General Filiosa camp with an answer to Santa Anna's dispatch. Mr. Smith could speak Spanish. He said he asked the Mexicans if he had been in the battle. The Mexican said yes, asked if he had been a prisoner. He said no. He escaped after dark the evening of the battle. Abandoned his horse at the burnt bridge. Smith then asked, had he seen General Coase? He said no. Smith then said, I am Deaf Smith. I want to find General Coase. He offered $1,000 for my head. If I can find him, we'll cut off his head and send it to Mexico. When they arrived at the battleground, was surprised to find his prisoner was General Coase. Smith took the horse and saddle back to Uncle James, gave him the fine pitcher when he got home. Uncle gave the pitcher to Mother. Father examined Uncle's shoulder, says there is no bones broke, that he would be well in 3 or 4 weeks. Mother had some of Uncle James' clothing. She trimmed his hair, made him go to the bayou, bathe, and put on clean clothing. All out soldiers were dirty and ragged. Mother wanted Uncle to go home with her as he had a fever. He would not, said he had been absent from the army 10 days, must report at headquarters. Dev Smith was very anxious to get back to the Army. He is very dark, looks more like a Mexican than a white man, is dressed in buckskin, said he would be ashamed to be seen in a white shirt, said Uncle James would be taken for a Tory or stay at home. Dev Smith was the man that helped burn the Vince Bridge, said if the bridge hadn't been destroyed, General Filioso would have heard of Santa Anna defeat and could have marched to his assistance as he was not more than 30 miles from the battleground. Also, General Urrea was on the west bank of the Brazos River with a division of the Mexican Army. When the first fugitives from the battleground arrived at Filioso headquarters, he didn't believe the report. When others came with the horrid tidings, they believed it. The Mexican fugitives gave such a dreadful account of Santa Anna downfall that General Filioso, when Dev Smith arrived, was preparing to cross the river to join General Urrea. Mr. Smith left our camp before daylight. Uncle James Well stayed with us till we were ready to start for home. He was sick all night. Father gave him medicine and bound up his arm. Mrs. Brown and family. We stayed one day on Sims Bayou there. We're more 100 families. All stopped to rest and let the stock feed. Met a lady, Mrs. Brown. She was living at William Vince's when the Mexican army crossed the bridge. They took possession of Alan Vince's fine black stable horse. Mrs. Brown's son, James, a lad age 13, went and mounted the horse. Wouldn't give him up. The Mexicans took the boy prisoner. His mother came out, asked for General Santa Anna. Colonel Almonte came and asked in English what he could do for her. She told him she was a subject of the King of England and demanded protection. Almonte assured her she and her children would not be hurt. Ordered her son liberated. Santa Anna's servant put a fine saddle on the horse. The saddle was ornamented with gold, solid gold stirrups. The Texas soldiers bid it in and presented the saddle to General Houston when the captured plunder was sold at auction. Mrs. Brown stayed at Mr. William Vince's till after the battle, met English friends from Columbia that were going home with them. The Atkins that lived in our neighborhood were relatives of Mrs. Brown's. We met the pretty English girl, Jane Atkins, married and the mother of two children. General Anna was captured the next day after the battle. He was seen by Captain Carnes to plunge in the bayou. On a fine black horse, he made his escape from the battleground on Alan Vince's stable horse, but not on the fine saddle. The horse went home with a common saddle. He was taken to headquarters and after a few days restored to Alan Vince. James Brown went to General Sherman and pointed out the horse. General Santa Anna was captured by James A. Sylvester, Washington, Secrets, and Sion Bostic. A Mr. Cole was the first man that got Santa Anna. He was hid in the grass, dirty and wet, dressed as a common soldier, rode to the camps behind Mr. Robertson. The men had no idea that they had Santa Anna a prisoner till the Mexicans began to say in their language, El Presidente. Note, Santa Anna gave Mr. Cole a cup. Mrs. Cole, his widow, has the cup. She lives at Eagle Lake, Colorado County. Father camped one day and two nights on Sims Bayou. We had traveled since the 21st without resting half the time in mud and water. It was only 15 miles from home. Early in the morning, broke camp. We were all alone. The other families lived farther down the country. The weather was getting warm. Stopped 2 hours in the middle of the day at Waterhole. When the sun set, we were 5 miles from home. Overtook our nearest neighbor, Mrs. West. She left Sims Bayou that morning with the Shipman family. Left them. Said she could find the way home. One of her oxen got down. She count, she get up or off the yoke off the other ox. When we drove up, she had four children on her horse. Was going to walk to our house. She knew we had started home that morning. If we had not stopped 2 hours, would have been with her by the middle of the afternoon. Father unyoked her oxen, turned loose one of the oxen that was broke down, put the oxen to Mrs. West's cart. It was now dark. We traveled slow. The oxen were tired. Keep feed all the time. One of Mrs. West's daughters and myself rode her horse. It was a great relief to me. I was tired of riding in the cart. It was 10 o'clock when we got home. May the 1st. We camped near the house. Father said we couldn't go in till morning. Uncle James told Mother The floor had been torn up by the Mexican searching for eggs. He would have put the house in order, but his shoulder and arm were so painful, he could not work. As soon as it was light enough for us to see, we went to the house. The first sight was the hogs running. Out father's bookcase on the ground broke up. Books, medicine, and other things on the ground, hogs sleeping on them. When Mrs. West's children's sister and I got to the door, there was one big hog that wouldn't go out till father shot at him. Then we children began picking up books. Could not find the little books Colonel Travis gave us, but found broken toys that belonged to the dear little sister that died. Through the joy and excitement since the Battle of San Jacinto, we had forgot our sad bereavement. The first thing Father did after breakfast was to go to the cornfield. He had planted corn the 1st of March. It needed plowing. He didn't wait till Monday or to put the house in order, but began plowing. His feed was in the bottom. He had hidden his plows in the bottom. Mother said I should ride Mrs. West's horse and go to Stafford Point and bring Brother Granville home. I didn't want to go. Sister said I could wear her bonnet. My dress was very much the worse of wear. Shoes down at the heels, dirty stockings, dress pinned in the back. I was greatly embarrassed. I knew all the boys were at the point, among them my boy lover, William Dyer. I'd done all the primping that circumstances would permit, plaited my hair, had my head and face wrapped in a tablecloth till my face was as white as snow. When I got to the point, there were more than 100 people there, men, women, children, Negroes, Mexicans, many of the Mexicans sick and wounded. I never seen such dirty, ragged crowd. The boys were there without shoes and hats, their hair down on their shoulders. After I met them, didn't feel ashamed of my appearance. Brother got his horse, we went home.
You are listening to Texas History Lessons, a slow walk through Texas history made in Texas by a Texan for everyone, everywhere.
Okay, I think that's going to do it for reading DeLu Rose Harris's memoirs of the time of the Texas Revolution. They're available online. And if you couldn't tell, it was a little difficult to read because her grammar, punctuation's lacking in it. But I did my best, and there's a lot of interesting information there that can be pulled out for understanding what it was like for people at that time. So I hope you enjoyed that. I'll be back soon with a little bit more interesting information. And take care of yourself. Take care of one another. Be kind. Adios.